Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to our Saturday broadcast. Today, I'm very sad and have had much to think about over the previous night. I found out last night that my deepest friend from college, a person who practically I did everything with, has died. We were practically like brothers in the way we shared our lives. This person, his name was Harry. He was a very interesting person because I never heard him speak a harsh word or a nasty word about anyone. He was a very kind and gentle person with a huge heart. And it was a twist of irony that he would die with a heart attack. One interesting thing about my friend was that he was a pagan. He didn't really believe in the same kind of God that everybody else would believe in. And at that time, that was a very revolutionary or unique way of seeing things. He was a person who saw the divine in nature, who saw the divine in people, who saw the divine in the way things were arranged. He didn't call himself a pagan, and he didn't follow any rituals or anything like that. He was just a normal person living a very normal life. But he had a very, very, very deep appreciation and feeling for people. Whoever came in contact with him could just feel what just a very good person he was. He found meaning in his own particular way, and he was very very confident in his own personal integrity with that meaning. He felt good about the way he found meaning. This was a very deep event for me, his passing, something I'm probably not going to get over for quite some time, but it forced me to really deeply grapple with and examine the issue of finding meaning in life. It was also interesting because the night before I had seen a movie which was basically all about the meaning of life for various people within it. Not only about the meaning of life, but about addictions and how they arise and how they function for us when we are searching for that meaning. I know that my friend Harry found meaning through people, through relationships, through being there for others. And I know for me, this is also the way I find meaning in my life. When I look around in life and I see, okay, things and accomplishments and praise or praise or defamy or any of the things that normally one works for, I don't find meaning in these things. But maybe I should rephrase that, because meaning is a very complex subject. It's a very difficult subject to even start to talk about. Some people say meaning is something that is given by the supreme or by the divine to mankind, and our role is just to accept that meaning. Other people say meaning is only what you make it. Whatever that meaning you make in life, that is the meaning that actually exists. Another class of man says that there is no meaning, yet that may be what they choose to accept as meaning. I know in my life, I went through a lot of stages of finding meaning even before I joined ISKCON or had anything to do with spirituality. First of all, there was meaning in family, then there was meaning in friendship, there was meaning in sports and accomplishment, there was meaning in scholastic accomplishments. Then there was meaning in music and acting. Then there was a stage where I embraced existentialism as a very viable and interesting form of viewing life. And although I very much embraced this understanding of the present, of the moment, of the experience that we are now having as primary, it didn't really work to say there was therefore no meaning. And when I came to that conclusion, I thought, let me look for other things. So I became a Baha'i, and I also was a transcendental meditation person, and I was then led to Zen Buddhism. Yeah, you had the order mixed up, but it doesn't matter. And ultimately, I liked all these things because I liked the mood, I liked the feeling, and I also liked the people who were involved in it. And there was meaning in this, and it filled a void in my life. I'd like to get into this understanding of this void, because this void within one's life, this feeling of an emptiness in a part of life, is what opens the doors for meaning to enter into it. For example, when you're hungry or thirsty, that opens the door for eating and drinking. If you're lusty, that opens the door for sexual encounters. If you're curious, it opens the doors to attain knowledge or search out knowledge, try to find out wisdom. If you have the desire to get money, it opens the doors for trying to work and earn. Now, because there is a, how shall we call it, a craving. It's a very interesting word, crave. We crave something. We feel that we want something. It's more than just a desire, because a desire can also be very ethereal or very subtle. But we crave something. Like when you're hungry, it's not like just a desire to eat, it's a craving. Then we actively seek out. Now, sometimes it happens that when we are not craving something, something comes to us. That's, of course, destiny. Of course, that's the way in which the universe is reciprocating with us. Things come to us automatically also. And it's important to make a distinction between things that come automatically like that and things that we crave and work to attain. Those things which come automatically seem to somehow or another seamlessly fit within our existence. They don't really affect us in the same way. And that's why we say things like easy come, easy go. If you buy something, you hold on to it. If somebody gives you something, you don't really, unless it's given with love, of course, you don't really care too much about it. So sometimes these things that come automatically don't affect us in the same way as things that we have worked so hard to attain. When we have these cravings to get food, for instance, I'll use the safer example. You can use your imagination for others. Food, for instance. And then we attain that food. Then we really eat and enjoy. But if you're not particularly hungry, you're not craving anything to eat, and somebody gives you a big piece of cake, you're not really interested in it. And if you eat it because it just tastes good and it's really giving you some buzz when you're eating it, then you eat it, but afterwards you feel lousy because you're full. There's no real digestion there. It's just not something which is fitting within the bodily functions in a healthy way. So the particular distinction I'm making here is that a craving is something which is burning with a metabolistic energy, where there's like a digestive power. Because of the craving for something, you can digest it. And when you have no craving and you're not really eager for it, it's very hard to digest that. And digestion is a very important thing, because if you can digest, you can eat anything. You can eat anything because you digest it, you burn it up, it's no problem. But if you cannot digest, you cannot eat anything, because it just creates ama or undigestible food or fat or clogging your body. All of these principles also work energetically. For example, if you're craving energy and you can burn it up, you can digest it, you can use it within yourself, then you could absorb more. But if you're not really craving it and it comes to you, it just basically makes you fall asleep. So it's more complicated than this, though. Like I said in the beginning, this is a very complicated subject. And you'll have to bear with me as I develop this theme, because as you notice from the title, we're talking about addiction and meaning. Now, one may think that these are two very different things, but actually they're very intimately connected. So even if you have this craving and you really need something, you really want it, you really desire it, it's like something you've got to have, that doesn't necessarily mean you can digest it. This is where an addiction would come in. For example, an alcoholic or a drug addict has craving for these things, yet can't digest it, and it harms them. It turns them duller, or it turns them sicker, or it turns them in a distorted version of themselves. But before I get back into the subject matter of meaning, I want to again understand a little better with all of you about these cravings, because they are intimately related to the concept of addiction, which is what I want to discuss. Now, for example, you may have a person who has a family, needs to make money, therefore they work very hard in their jobs, they work very hard in their professions to earn a lot of money. So they have this desire, this need to earn, and they're going out to do it all the time. Now, while they're doing that, while they're doing this great work, while they're doing this great endeavor, while they're struggling so hard to get this done, they are actually working with the same energy, with the same endeavor, with the same enthusiasm that a person who would be addicted to something and is therefore craving it. They work in the same kind of way, but it's very different. Now, we know it's different. We have this feeling within us that there's a big difference, of course. In fact, to even speak about the two things in the same paragraph makes us feel a little uncomfortable. But there is similarity, yet we know there is a difference. So to discover the difference is interesting. Now, the difference is that in one sense, when one is making money, when one is working at his profession, when one is trying very hard to get ahead in that way, it ultimately ends up in earning money. It's something which is considered to be constructive, something which builds, something which brings prosperity and stability in life. Whereas those who work towards their fulfilling their cravings and work towards fulfilling that which they are addicted to usually are just expending money. They're just wasting away. They are burning it up in sense gratification, which they call it that. They're just burning it up. It's not constructive. It doesn't bring about stability. And because of that distinction, we consider one kind of great endeavor and craving to be acceptable and the other to be unacceptable. And this is interesting because in everyone's lives, there is a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Let's take the example of a person who just goes insane making money in business endeavors. It's just making money, making money, making money, to the degree where they don't even care anymore about who has to be harmed for them to make money. The question is, how much money is enough? To that person, there's never enough. It's always got to grow. And very few people would disagree with the concept that money should always be growing, always be expanding, and always be increasing. There is no limit to it, yet at the same time, one becomes addicted to that particular kind of activity and loses perspective. And instead of it being constructive, it can be destructive in terms of stress or anxiety, or even the way in which one loses connection with others or loses connection with oneself. So here we have something which we could label as a constructive, acceptable craving or even activity, but at one point it can become an addiction. Where's that line? Where do we draw that line? Very difficult. Let's go to the other side where we were talking about people who are addicted to drugs or alcohol or anything like that. Where does one draw the line? How does one go from a normal experience to an addiction which is destructive or unacceptable? There are people who say, there are religious systems which say, no drugs, no alcohol, no TV, no sex, no games, no sports, no any activity which is not directly related to something spiritual. And by complete negation of all of these activities, one will be safe and one doesn't have to think about where that fine line is between acceptable and unacceptable, between overindulgence and simply relaxing. Now, sure, this may be, somewhat interesting in the sense of making your life safe, making your life secure. You don't have to make any choices. You don't have to make any decisions for how much you will allow yourself to have fun in that way. Yet, when one pays that price, one may be creating another situation which is unacceptable. And this is, again, where we have this problem of how do we deal with actions which we can call unacceptable, especially when they relate to cravings. There are people who are addicted to television. Their whole lives are taking place inside this machine. Their whole intelligence, their whole everything is within that machine. There are those who are addicted to the internet. There are those who are addicted to video games. There are those who are addicted to things which we wouldn't even consider to be addictions. We can, of course, in a blanket way, say everybody's an illusion. They are all just simply don't have a clue about what's best for them. Therefore, we reject them as being ignorant, and we maintain our situation without any connection to any of these things. Now, at this point, we have to switch over to the other half of this topic, which is meaning. And you will very quickly see how these two, addiction and meaning, are related. Those people who say just don't have any connection with anything which is addicting and whatsoever are those same people who say there is a higher meaning, that higher meaning is only there when you connect with God. And you just connect yourself to this organization, whatever it may be, any kind of religious organization or whatever, and we will give you the meaning in your life. And when we give you this meaning, you no longer have to worry about the fine line between acceptable and unacceptable, between a normal activity and addiction. And your main business is to believe this meaning that we are giving you, accept it as completely true and relevant, and have total faith that this meaning will give purpose to your life and will bring you to the best destination. And that always includes some idea that whatever is here now is all illusion. All that counts is at the end you will go to some better spiritual place. Now, as far as filling the void. Remember, we were talking about that emptiness inside one. This fills that void very well if you allow it to, if you wish it to. You don't have to deal with or worry about addictions of any kind. You just fully accept and throw yourself into this newfound meaning, and a lot of the weight on your mind and heart is thrown away. And this works for some time because it has such a deep effect on one, because it affects one at the level of meaning. It has a deep effect. And then it gives one a feeling for some time, but at one point it starts to be doubtful. We start to question it. Because usually one ends up in this situation when one had this space which needed to be filled with meaning. Having accepted this meaning from someone else, from somewhere else, because one had this space in one's life. We talked about this space in the beginning of the lecture. Because you were craving for meaning. Meaning came. It filled a void. You feel okay. But also, other problems come, as we are all aware of. No need to speak about them right now. To understand this better, I'm going to bring you back again to addiction. Like I said, this is a very complicated discussion. It's not something you can easily formulate and give a very linear kind of discussion where one point follows the other in a very simple way and everybody goes, yeah, 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 yeah. I have to bounce back and forth to build up a concept structure. Why do people become addicted to something in the first place? Let's use a safe example. The example of TV or any form of entertainment. Why do people spend so much time with these forms of media? Well, basically because their lives don't give them enough stimulation, don't give them enough reason to be involved in other aspects. They don't find meaning in other aspects of their lives, yet I'm now using the word meaning to be related to experiences which relate to intensity. I'm going to go back now to the meaning of the word meaning, to the definition that I'm using here for this section of this discussion. When I speak about meaning, I'm speaking about that which I create as meaning, that which I accept as meaningful to me. And if I like experiences which enliven me, if I want experiences which give me something more than the ordinary wake up, brush your teeth, eat some breakfast, do some work. I want something which excites me. I'm a person who finds meaning in experiences. Some people find meaning in great artistic creations because it gives them that taste of experience they like. Yet others may find meaning in the taste of experience of something which they find interesting in terms of nature or sports or any other form of activity. So everybody will find meaning through experience in a different way. Whatever it is that relates with their chemicals of their body, of their physical and emotional and mental makeup. Some people find it through peace. Some people find it through action. Some people find it through some days peace, some days action. Some people want to mix it up within the single day. Some people do it within periods of weeks. Everybody has their own particular way of creating the recipe of meaningful experience. So our lives are built up of a composite of these things which relate to us in a way which give us feelings that, yes, there's something to life that I can relate to. It's okay for me. I like this. So why would somebody just spend their whole time being related to a media, for instance? Well, maybe because they don't have the facility to experience in other ways. Maybe they have some disability. Maybe they haven't the economic capacity. Maybe they're alone or sick or afraid. But where's the limit? Where's the line? Maybe they become so absorbed in their fantasy world of media that they lose connection to the regular reality around them. And other people deal with them as if they're a little crazy. They get in trouble. There are those who find no reality or meaning or purpose in the world around them. So they take advantage of drugs, or they take advantage of getting intoxicated in various ways to escape the situation of meaningless they find around them. There are others who are sex addicts in the same way. So you have the possibility of any form of addiction developing when there is this void which needs to be filled. And it depends on your destiny, your fate, what it is you wish to go through in life, or even your good fortune, how that void is filled when it appears. And it always will appear. That's just simply the nature of life, that our lives bring us unavoidably at one point to having to find out or redefine or discover meaning within our lives. And those who cannot find meaning in the more, shall we say, religious or humanitarian or selfless forms of work or action will often become addicted to other forms of diversionary activities to give themselves meaning. Now, those people who engage in religious activities to do it are having a lot of trouble nowadays maintaining their feeling of meaningfulness in their lives. And that problem almost always is related to people, which is why you can understand in the beginning I said my meaning in life is always related to people. Here you have this wonderful package of meaning that fills the void, this wonderful package of meaning, this wonderful package of higher, ultimate, absolute reality coming down like rain and putting out the fire of craving. And you are promised that in the future you will go to the promised land, the abode of God. You are promised that you will attain all kinds of spiritual levels of advancement. You are promised that you will be able to get freed from all of those things which are problematic in this world. And one fills one's life with these meanings because one chooses to accept that this is what is meaningful in life, to get out of this place. After all, this world has been described as some as a toilet where you just simply do your business and get out. And when you have such a conception of reality, what happens is that you have no longer any interest in what's going on in this world. Therefore, for you, this world will have no meaning. You can only find meaning in another place, another location. And that creates, or that opens the doors to a lot of difficulties which will come down the line. Because then you have to do something here in this world. So what do you got to do? You got to do God's work. So you have to be busy and endeavor and work and do things. But that places you firmly within the rules of this world. And the rules of this world say you have to have money. The rules of this world say you have to have it growing. The rules of this world say you need more people to do work. You have to maximize profits and minimize expenses and organize and say yes to some and no to others and work hard. That's the rule of this world. And because anything that people do has to be related to that meaning, so they have to do projects to save the world. And they have to make big projects to save the world, otherwise it doesn't have meaning because it's not related to saving the world. But some are better at it than others. Some are worse. Some are lazier. Some work harder. Some have more capacities. Some are more stable. Some are less stable. Some are actually totally crazy. Some just simply need a place to live. Some people actually end up hating you. Some people love you, but for the wrong reasons. Some people want to give you trouble. Some people are envious. Some people want to help you. Some people form groups against you, for you, with you, without you. It's a whole chaos, just like it is everywhere else. And yet you have accepted your void being filled with the meaning that is given, and this creates a kind of struggle within, because along with that you had to give up everything that could have been related to you personally and your personal experiences. And because after some time these external things start to become dominating life, because you are still in this world, even though you've tried to forget about this world, you become so disturbed in various ways that part of you starts to crave something else. And because you are craving, you are now sinful. You are now fallen. And you have to condemn yourself and repress yourself totally for being bad, for not accepting the meaning that has filled your void. And because you're not allowed to find any other kind of meaning, you're stuck. Some people deal with this by increasing their activity, by becoming more and more active, so they never have to think about themselves or their lives. Some run out of the door screaming, saying, "I got to enjoy!" Ah! Others just repress themselves totally until they become dull and cold, frigid like an ice cube. Others use their feeling of dissatisfaction with themselves to condemn others, and in this way, somehow or another, feel better about their own situation. Others just try to create a situation within that so-called meaning where they can have the best of both worlds. All in all, it's a tough situation. Yet those who are existentialists, those who see no meaning in life, often drive themselves off of a road and just commit suicide because, living or dying, what's the difference? Others deal with meanings or lack of it or contradictory meanings by just drugging themselves up. Some do it because they've lost somebody they loved. Some because they never could find love. Some because they were abused as children or neglected as children. Some because they came from a violent and hateful environment. Some because they had to fight and fend for themselves from the very beginning because they weren't taken care of. Some because they simply were never told by anyone that they were good or that they had done something nicely. There are thousands of reasons, whether one be given meaning or think there is no meaning or struggling to find meaning. There are thousands of reasons why one would fall into some form of addiction or another. But I want to go back to what gives me meaning, because for me, that's all I can talk about at this point. And what gives me meaning is people. Now, sometimes I need to get away from people and go sit by a tree, but I can't do that forever. I always come back to people. Loving people, embracing people, being able to do something good for people, to do things with people, to somehow or another have my life impact the lives of someone else or others. I cannot give meaning to anybody. I often am asked about meaning of life. I know many people ask me, I find no meaning in my life. Can you help me? What meaning should I have? Can you help me? They have this void which needs to be filled, so they ask me to fill it for them. I will not do that. I know I cannot do that. Only you can find meaning in your own life for yourself. I know that I've tried to find meaning outside of myself for a long time and really thought that this was the solution for some time, But ultimately, I know there's only one solution, and that is to find meaning through the interaction and experience with people. But that's me. That's just the way I am. Some people find meaning by relating and interacting and assisting animals. Other people find it meaningful to take care of plants and nature. Other people find meaning by doing great projects for the sake of a community or for saving the rainforest and the Amazon. Or some people try to do it through politics, I mean very rarely. Other people try to do it in various ways according to their own nature. But I can say quite honestly that everybody has to find their own meaning, and it is perhaps the whole point of life that we find what it is that gives us meaning in this life. And I hope it does not sound strange to say that the meaning of life is the endeavor to find out what is your meaning in life. Because only you can find meaning in your own particular way, in your own particular time, with your own particular process and struggle through the obstacles to attain that meaning. But if at least you are aware of this as being one of the primary businesses of your life, you are at least prepared for the struggle that you're going to go through. Having meaning is absolutely important. I will never say that life is meaningless or that there's no need to find meaning. Not at all. You will find your own meaning in your own way. Some people will find their meaning by surrendering to religious groups. Other people will find their meaning in addictions and then coming beyond it, or coming beyond anything they do, or moving through different stages of experiences until they understand something about themselves, where they find their meaning. But for me, I only find meaning in people, where I can be of service for people, where I can actually impact a person's life in a positive way with what I know, with what I have experienced. That gives me meaning. That is my experience of meaning. And everything else I may do will just be things that fill the spaces between meaningful activities. And I don't worry about this space-filling time, because what I focus on are those few intense, meaningful moments of being of service to others. Now, of course, I don't know if I can honestly say that I have covered or enlightened anyone in this discussion between addiction and meaning. I have simply tried to scratch the surface of those mechanisms which are involved in addiction and in searching out meaning and how they relate. I know I could have spoken more about the way in which we either cannot find meaning in some significant positive way, so we seek out meaning more according to addictions. I could have spoken about that more, but I didn't have time. But actually, I think that there's enough material here to help you think about this in such a way that you can seek out, if you have not already succeeded, in finding your meaning within the unexpected areas of life. You know, formerly, just so that I can share with you about my own struggle of attaining my understanding, formerly I used to think that my meaning was only there when somehow or another everybody would be connected with the divine, and that would be the end of it. And their little struggles in daily life and everything were not important as compared to that. But at this point, I feel that even to be able to help a person make one step in a positive way, to have one aha moment, to have one understanding which will assist them in such a positive way, is worth everything to me. I don't see it so important as to find meaning way over there. I want to find meaning right here, right now. So I hope that has been of assistance in some little way that makes my Saturday meaningful.
I'm ready to speak
okay,
in English.
Okay, go ahead.
The question is, when one tries to get this feeling of life, of present moment, this vital feeling of existence, of experience, one often finds that some previous beliefs or previous patterns from the past are obstructing this to happen, and it sometimes seems to be impossible to overcome them. What might be the advice to overcome the past old patterns?
Good question. So we'll do that method from now on. Whenever you're going to ask me in English, you tell me and I'll pan it to the center. It makes it easier for editing. The reason why previous obstacles, or I wouldn't call them previous obstacles, I would call them previous experiences, create obstacles to realize the present and experience the present now, is because these previous experiences gave one the feeling that experience is painful. And answer it too. Anything that blocks us from, or rather, I wouldn't use the word block, okay? That's a very absolute word. It means stop totally. But anything that discourages us from experiencing now almost always has to do with bad experiences we've had in the past. Now, if you think about that, that makes perfect sense. When you have a bad experience of eating a certain type of food, if somebody gives it to you again, you are filled with doubt in your mind, and you're not enthusiastic to eat it. And because you have that bad experience, what happens is that you just lose your enthusiasm. Your enthusiasm is only possible when you have the feeling of safety, of that what you're going to do will be a positive thing. And when it doesn't have that positive capability or potential, we become afraid of it. And when we become afraid of it, we avoid it. And that's a very, very, very important consideration. Now, if you understand that, that answers basically all of the situations and problems that we are facing now in our lives, which discourage us from accepting the experiences we are having. You're broadcasting a little too loud, Mashai, on your part, and you're breaking up. You increased your volume somehow. Maybe the microphone's a little too close. Just put it back the way it was, okay? Now, that does not mean that you should throw caution to the winds and just accept any situation without fear. There are things which do cause you trouble. Therefore, your previous experiences of negativity are useful for building up your vision of what's acceptable and what's not. But you have to be aware of not allowing an irrational or a unsubstantiated fear from giving you experiences in the present. But that's easier said than done. It's easy for me to say, but when the situation arises, it becomes extremely difficult to deal with it. So if you are experiencing difficulty in engaging in a particular type of experience, then try to experience something else. But if you are just paranoid about all experiences of the present, that's an existential difficulty. It doesn't really relate to particular incidences. It relates to general fear, general paranoia, general inability to have any trust in the existence or creation. And one has to deal with that in other ways. One has to go into some therapeutic kind of a effort or try to accept therapy in such a way that one can get rid of such a fear, so one is allowed, or rather you allow yourself to experience life. Does that answer the querence? Any other questions? You don't have to have questions. It's not like you need to have questions. Okay, hang on. I'll put you in the center. Go.
Clear about general. During life, one comes to understanding that worse for you accept something, but it sometimes can be so painful to accept this.
I didn't understand it. It wasn't clear. It was breaking up. Say it again.
It's clear in general about what you said, but when it comes to specific situation, it sometimes it is very so painful to accept.
Accept what?
For example, some situation about relationships with our close.
Is that it? Hello, hello?
For example, when our close relative doesn't understand us, and when we try to accept not understanding us, somehow it works such a big pain within.
Okay, this is another situation. This is not a situation which blocks our capacity to experience in the present. It's another question. And in this question, the idea is that you felt pain in dealing with others and you're afraid to continue dealing with them. That's the usual kind of give and take interaction difficulty which everybody faces in every aspect of their lives. It would be easy to say, don't worry about it so much and just go on, but that's not possible, especially when the pain comes from relatives. Therefore, the pain of harsh words sent at you by a relative is something which is extremely difficult to bear, and we even see that in the Mahabharata. Wasn't it we find in the Bhagavatam that Vidura left home because of what Duryodhana said to him, and he was a relative. You see, the pain, even for such a great soul as Vidura, was just so incredibly great when it comes from a relative. So we do find examples of this pain being unbearable even for great souls. Any other? Sure, I just said that. And you're saying, yeah, great, but what's the answer? And I say, hey, the pain is the answer. It's just something you can experience and that's all you can do about it. And I know that's not very satisfying if you're looking for easy answers or set pat answers, but I don't have it for that, sorry. There's no pain reliever for the pain that comes from those who love you or who you love. Okay, well, there are no screaming questions, that's fine. I'd like to get into the meditation. This week, I'd like to do a continuation on last week's meditation and also to explain a little bit more about it. Since last week, I've done a little bit more research because of the questions that were asked me, and I found out a few things which are interesting. Some people were asking about colors of pyramids. I still believe they can be anything you like or feel happy with, but I have found interesting symbolism related to the female triangular shape and the male triangular shape. The female triangular shape in the tradition of the yantra makers, those who make yantras, and also in China, is that the female color of the pyramid is red, the male color is white. And you will find many yantras where there are representations of Shiva in this form and the representations of Durga in that form. And they build yantras based on that. And I remember last week we were having some difficulty about the direction in which things turn. And I had thought that perhaps it is not fixed or absolute that they must turn in a particular direction. And I found that out myself, that one, just as long as they turn in opposite directions, they give you a wonderful result. And I know this may sound a little weird, but I'll just tell you my own personal experience, that because I'm a man, I suppose, my male pyramid has its own desire which direction it wants to move in. So I just let it move in the direction it wants to, and then I have the female pyramid move in the opposite direction. So depending on my mood that I'm not even aware of, okay, it wants to move in a certain way. So I just go with it, and it works either way fine. And there are different results accordingly. It balances me. It generates something I need or works something positive towards me. Either direction it goes, but there are different results according to the direction. It's a very multi-purpose generator. And for the ladies, I suppose, I just speculate, I have no idea, you might find that your female pyramid will have its own desire which way it wants to go, and you can just go with that. You can experiment that way. You just become aware of it. You just become aware of what it wants to do before you start trying to control it. Just feel what is going on. And I experimented with a few things, just for fun. I experimented with raising Kundalini to the Manipura chakra in the back and doing this, and then also having it right in the middle of the pyramid as it was going on. Both were outrageous and tons of fun to do. And the wildest, in my mind, thing of all that happened was I was doing it in front of the deities, and all of a sudden I got the idea to have Lord Chaitanya sitting in the middle of the pyramid in that spot where the two were overlapping each other. And as soon as I put Lord Chaitanya in there, the pyramids just exploded. And it was an extraordinary experience, not that Lord Chaitanya meant to say the pyramids were bad, but rather that he was the embodiment of all of this, and you didn't need any of it anymore. When you have Lord Chaitanya, you have everything. That perfect balance of the male and female energies as he is. So, very many interesting things I find personally, but even more interesting were the experiences I've heard from others. And without mentioning names, I just like to share a couple which I feel are very relevant. One very fascinating thing about these generators is that they are liberators. They liberate you from your internal boundaries. They focus you on things which are extremely important for you. So some people had enormously sexual experiences while they were performing these meditations, which were mixed with incredibly spiritual experiences at the same time. That is extremely tantric in its nature. Some people need to break free from their self-imposed restrictions in order to understand the extreme sensuality within the spiritual realm or within their own spiritual energy or in this spiritual energy that exists. Because most people equate sensuality with sexuality. But the way we have defined it in this world, it is not so. You know, after all, the love affairs of Radha and Krishna are of a very erotic nature. Yet we have always gone out of our way to separate that from what we define as sexual. But actually, we have created that distinction in order to separate ourselves or to divorce ourselves, the perfect word, from our sexual understanding of this world, because it is not that way as we have perceived it so far, perhaps, in our lives. Yet that erotic spiritual energy is very much a part of the relationship between Radha and Krishna, Krishna and the gopis, of course. Yet it is of a quality which is inspiring, enlivening. It brings energy. It generates energy. It generates power. Indeed, it generates the whole creation. So this generation breaks down these artificial boundaries and constructions we have made to protect ourselves from what we feel is a contamination of the spiritual realm, which basically we cannot do. Other people have experienced an enormous increase of power, yet to such a degree that they don't really know how to deal with it. They don't know what to do with it. They say, there it is, now what? And my answer to that is, well, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to do something. This is not something you have to do. It's just there. And when it needs to flow, it will. Don't worry about it. This spiritual generator is not generating like, you know, a generator would generate electricity, which is needed for machines. It's not like that. It's not to generate something to be used by something. It is in and of itself. Wherever you are connected, whatever energy is drawn within that generated field is just what you need to have. Just accept it. Let it flow. Let it work for you, with you, together, and accept it. You might notice if you look on the site that we have not posted last week's lecture about this. We have not posted the meditation because I started getting this feeling that I've gone beyond the realm of public. It's become more private. I told Gora, I think it's best we make a secret society where we deal with this in a secret society. I would feel more happy with it in a secret society. And he said, what does that mean? I said, I don't know, but that's how I feel. I get the feeling like, my goodness, we've entered into something so confidential, so powerful, so, how to say it? It's dangerous. And yet I can't figure out why or how. And part of me wants to say, hey, world, listen to this. And another part of me wants to say, hey, just close the doors, lock them. So therefore, we're just not doing anything right now about it. If you want to continue with this, it's got to be live. So, I don't know. I hope that's okay, but that's what I'm going to do. So that I can have some perhaps illusory semblance of control over this situation, which I know I have none of, but it just kind of makes me feel better so I can sleep at night. It's like kind of when you're creating like this monster, you know, in your laboratory, like the doctor who's putting the things in, and out comes this monster crawling out, and everybody's freaking out, and the doctor thinks, what have I done? And oh my God. Well, it's not like that, obviously. We're dealing with something which is rather spiritual, and at the same time, it will increase everybody's integrity and capacities, no doubt about it. It's just that I feel like that, and I don't know why, and I'm not exactly sure what to do about it, but I'm definitely not being told to stop. I must admit I'm not a terribly self-confident person. I'm always full of doubts and wondering. But anyway, so much, that's what it is. In any case, this thing's really something. And I have tried with the three, like you said, Ma, about the three-faced pyramid, and I don't think that comes anywhere close to the four-face pyramid in its capacities and powers, although the three-face pyramid is fine too, but we'll stick with the four. But hey, it's your life, you can do what you want, but in the ones that I will introduce or lead you through or reproduce, we'll use the four-face pyramids. Now, somebody asked me if it's the turning is related to whether you look from the top or the bottom. And as far as I can understand, things that turn that one way from the top turn the same way from the bottom. So I don't really know what they're talking about. So now I've just given a lot of hints, techniques, blah, blah, blah. But I'd rather not direct really what you do in this meditation. I'm simply going to set up the meditation and set up the pyramids with you. You may place your kundalini anywhere you like. I recommend only those two places, the Manipura or Agya Chakra area. or not use it as you like. I think the very fact that many of us do it together expands enormously our individual capacities. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set it up and also create with us together a network around the world where we can etherically hold our energy fields together, you know, kind of like the etheric way of saying holding our hands in a ring around the world, and then do this meditation together with the idea of being powerful generators of something positive. You know, that doesn't necessarily have to mean something obviously presently good. I just mean something positive, even a change positive, which may go by way of something not so what you would label as good, but something positive. And again, I'm not going to use music because in this particular meditation, you do not, you know, because music, it swings moods. When the music changes, your mood changes. In this meditation, we don't want mood swings. We want the same mood all the way through. So I'm not going to have any music.